I'm Suzanne, I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Gil for asking me to speak tonight and for that interesting dinner we had. I'd like to welcome the newcomers and welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the best deal in town. You just got to stick around long enough to figure that out. And to the people that took birthdays, congratulations. And damn, Dixie, 42 years? That's a long time. My sobriety date is April 6, 1989. I hate doing mental math, so I'll do it for you, because when people say that, I sit in the audience and go, okay, when did they get sober? How old are they now? Da-da-da. I was 22 years old when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober 33 years and I'm 56 years old, so I just took the math out of it for you. I'd also like to thank Chris. That was a great pitch. Yeah. Loved your story. And you told my story up until you got to the part with the baseball bat, and I thought I didn't necessarily do that, but you know, there was equivalence, so. I come from alcoholism. I have alcoholics swinging from both sides of my family tree. My mother was an alcoholic. My dad also apparently was an alcoholic, although he hid it really well. My parents were kind of polar opposites. My mother was very vivacious and outgoing and, oh my God, so good to see you. And my dad was just kind of like sit there like this and real stoic and quiet and didn't talk about feelings. And, you know, we talk about the price of wood and how the Rams are doing. But other than that, well, I don't want to talk about it, you know. If you expressed a feeling, it made him visually uncomfortable. So you just stop doing that, right? Being raised in alcoholism, it really... It affects your sense of security. I got to the point where I got real fearful as a child. I was the caretaker for my mom because she was a single mom. My parents had divorced. So she was very successful. Both of my parents were. We were upper middle class. We lived in, you know, houses with boat docks in the backyard and at the beach. And I was just spoiled rotten. But every night she'd drink, and I kind of had to fend for myself. So you learn a lot of those coping skills and the survival skills that you need, you know, as a small child. So it made me really independent at a young age. It also made me really bitter and angry and fearful and all of those things we talk about, and it made me feel different. And I have to laugh sitting in this church because I was sent to Christian schools. So I was sent to first a Lutheran school and then a Christian and then a Baptist, and she was getting ready to send me to Catholic high school, and it was like, I've had enough already. Because I would come to these things and they'd say, oh, you can pray for whatever you want, right? You know, pray to God to help you with your problems. And I always prayed that my mother would get sober, and it never happened. And so I decided, yeah, there's no God. You know, you guys are just believing in Santa and the Tooth Fairy, too, I bet, right? I started drinking when I was about 12. And the first time I drank, it was like all the promises in the Big Book came true for me. Right? I knew a new freedom and a new happiness. I did not, you know, wish to shut the door on my, you know, and the whole thing. And it was like, this is what normal people feel like. You know, I was wound so tight, and I was so fearful, and when I took that first drink, it was like I relaxed, and I didn't care anymore, you know? And the thing that alcohol did for me, which was great and which was horrifying, was, you know, it took all my fears away, you know? Because I walked around afraid of everything. I was afraid something was going to happen to my mom. I was afraid something, you know, was going to happen to me. It took all my fears away. You know, even the ones we need to stay safe, right? When they take all your fears away, I mean, I'm thinking everything's a great idea. You know, creepy guy in the white van, want a party? Sure. Dude, you know? You know, hey, you want to take your clothes off in public? Woo! You know, no fear at all. You know, I wasn't shy anymore, you know? So I started drinking when I was in the Christian schools, and that doesn't really go over well. You know, they kind of frown upon that in seventh grade, and I was that girl, right? I'd invite you to my party, and then I'd spike the punch with vodka, and you and your Christian mom would be bitching my mom out, you know, the next day because I got her little Rebecca drunk. It's like, I don't know what house you thought you came to. I mean, check out my mom. She's drunk, too. So, you know. So I was different than most of my friends. You know, everybody had, their parents were married. They went to church. They sat and they had dinner together. And I didn't know there was anything wrong with my life until I went to their house, and their life was perfect, you know. And they'd come to my house, and there's my mom in her bra and her curlers, you know, singing. And it's like, you know, you can't invite friends over. You know, you don't want mom to come to this basketball game because you never know what you're getting with that. So when I started drinking at her, you know, and then it became the thing that I needed. And by the time I was 13, I was in front of liquor stores, like, giving guys $5, so you spot me some beer, you know. I think about that today, and it's horrifying, you know. But back then, it was like I was so cool, and, you know. And I used to, you know, and I did drugs before I ever drank because they were easier to get. You know, I just needed to change the way I was feeling. I didn't want to feel like this. I want to feel different, better, feel nothing, you know. My problem is that once I start drinking, I don't have an off switch. You know, it's all gas and no brake. It's like I could never get to that. I'd get to that sweet spot, you know, about six beers in, feeling pretty good, life's okay, not doing anything stupid. And then I would cross that line. It'd be like, more is better. I need more, you know. I don't stop until I go to jail, humiliate myself, pass out, die, whatever it is. I don't stop, you know. So I spent, like, the most of my teenage years, I lived in Ventura, Oxnard, so we would hitchhike down to L.A. and we'd go see concerts, me and my girlfriends, and, you know, I mean, it was fun. I had a good time. There was no responsibility. I didn't care anymore, you know, except I was a blackout drinker, you know, so I would come to in the weirdest places. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I would end up towns away with people I didn't even know. I mean, last I remember, I was having a beer with a friend, and now I'm in Big Sur in the back of somebody's truck, you know? Or I was at the liquor store, and then all of a sudden I'm naked in some guy's house covered in plaster of Paris, and I don't know why. Right? And I don't know who this is, but I've got to kind of casually go, hey, I'm going to use the restroom and go put my clothes on with a plaster of Paris on and walk home in the middle of some field in Oxnard. I'm like, oh, my God. Right? Like, hey, it's been fun, but I got to go. You know, who does that? And still trying to figure out what I did. You know, I mean, back in the 80s, it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and cocaine, and you know, let's drink ourselves to death. You know, it was keggers and beer bongs, and, you know, I'd wake up down in L.A., you know, I remember waking up in the gutter one time, and somebody goes, here, have this beer. I'm doing beer bongs in the gutter, you know, and I'm like 16. I ended up, I used to hang out with bikers. I was like the biker's old lady because I could get into bars. If you go with bikers, you can get into bars when you're 15. Nobody cares. So I got pregnant when I was 18, and I thought, my mom used to always tell me, what are you going to do with the rest of your life, Susanna? And I'd be like, I don't know. I'm like 7. What do you want? You know? But she always said that. And I always thought I had to have this big plan, and I never had a big plan. There was nothing I was interested in but partying, you know. And when I got pregnant and she found out, I told her, I said, well, I guess this is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, right? I'm going to have a baby. How hard can that be? You know, it's like a pet, right? You just kind of feed it and make sure it doesn't die. Because I'm 18 and I'm having a baby, and emotionally I'm about 12. You know, the thing that did for me was it gave me a conscience. And really, alcoholics don't need a conscience. I mean, we do better without it, I got to tell you. Because I couldn't go out and do those things that I was doing anymore. But I did. I continued to do that, you know, and I would drive drunk and I'd have my baby in the car, and I was not the greatest mom in the whole world. Let's just put it that way. You know, I fed her and played with her and, you know, tried to keep her safe. But the thing is when I start drinking, nobody's safe. They're not safe with me because I go into blackouts and, you know, where did I leave my car? Well, where did I leave my daughter? I mean, that was the thing, you know, and the blackouts that I would come out of, I'd be chasing somebody with a knife and I'm screaming something and I come out and I'm thinking, what am I doing? And, you know, you don't want to act uncool, so you're like, yeah, you better run. I don't even know who this guy is or why I'm doing this, right? It was like I roofied myself every night. That's what it felt like. Right? But, you know, we have this way of, like, completely humiliating ourselves. And a lot of the stories I tell are funny. And, oh, my God, you know, you guys laugh. But I'll tell you what, you ever get into it with your coworkers and they're like, oh, my God, I got so drunk one time. I was at a concert and I lost my shoes. And you just sit there looking at them like, oh, my God, I can't believe that happened to you. You know? And I'm there telling stories about how I'm flashing people at the Who concert, you know, end up with the Hell's Angels somewhere, and they're like, they don't laugh like you do. They just stare at me, and they're like horrified, like, oh, my God. And I have this one coworker that every time we start telling stories, she goes, oh, my God, you should be dead. I'm like, I know, and I start laughing. You guys get that. They don't get that. I think they, like, go to church and pray for me or something. I don't know. So all the drunk driving and all the humiliation and the waking up with weird people in strange places and all of that, it was a continuous thing. It just kept going and going and going. And it gets to the point, especially when you're a woman, that you've trashed yourself so much. You wake up in the morning and you just want to die. Like, one more time. I did this, you know? And I look at my daughter and I think, she's looking at me like I can take care of her. And at one point I told my mom, I go, you know what? You're going to have to take care of her. I can't quit drinking. And I mean, really think about that. I told you my mother's an alcoholic. I'm just passing her from one alcoholic to another. And my mother told me, and the best thing that she ever told me, she said, no, this is your responsibility. So I had to get it together at some point, right? Because my mother was doing things like I'd drop her off with my mom and I'd be like, I'll be right back. I'm going to the store. And you know what that means. I'm going to the bar. I'm only going to have 2 beers because I only have $2 on me and I'm going to come right back. Like 5 hours later, here comes my mom into the bar with my daughter. She's 2, dragging her in there going, this is your responsibility, Susanna. You need to take care of her. And I'm like, oh, my God, how uncool in front of all my friends. You know. But really, it takes its toll on you, you know, because my drinking got worse and worse. And I told you that 6-pack would make me feel like right there, but I couldn't stop. And at the end of my drinking, I got to where I was drinking 18 beers a day. And that's a lot. I mean, when I was 15, I could drink grown men under the table, and I went to biker bars. And it used to be fun to just challenge them. I'll drink you under the table. They're like, no way. I did. But I got to the point where I couldn't stop running my mouth and doing stupid stuff. You know, I would go into a bar and, you know, I'd get drunk and go up to the biggest guy in the room and he'd be talking to me and I'd be like, you know what? You are the ugliest looking woman I've ever seen in my life. And it was on, you know. So, yeah, and I did some dangerous stuff, too. I mean, I had a cocaine dealer boyfriend and got pissed at him one time, drunk, told him, I'm going to rat you out. And it was like, oh, my God. Did I not notice the Colombian people coming over to the house? I mean, what? Right? So I moved to Santa Maria when I was 20, when my daughter was 2. Her dad had died of addiction by the time she was 3. I used to go back and forth to Thousand Oaks, and I'd be driving drunk, and I was coming back one time down the Caneo Grade, and I was they said I was going across all the lanes, almost sideswiping people, and I got pulled over and I got a DUI. Now, I should have had a million DUIs, but I didn't. This one, and the thing about it is I kind of knew the end of my drinking was coming because I remember coming to in jail and some hooker was talking to me and she's like, can you believe they did that to you? And I just looked at her and I said, you know what? They probably saved my life. Because I was headed back to Santa Maria and I'd been drinking for 12 hours and I was like at a 0.3 when I got pulled over. So they probably saved my life and I knew it. So what they did is they wanted me to go to, and this is back in 88, they wanted me to do 6 AA meetings, pay a fine, go to alcohol class, and go to some alcohol school and some other stuff, and 6 AA meetings. And I did all that. I paid the fine. I went to all these classes, and I couldn't make myself go to meetings because I thought, number one, this isn't going to work, and God help me if it does. What am I going to do then, right? So I put that off. You know, you've got 6 months to do that. So month number 5 came around and my mom kept going, you know, Susanna, you need to go to a meeting. I mean, you need to get your card signed. So she goes, hey, let's go together. You know, I told you my mom's perky, right? Everything is jump on the bandwagon. Oh my God, let's go to a meeting together. And I'm like, oh my God, with my mom. So we went to this meeting, and I remember, you know, she's really like, woo, and I'm like, not, and stop, don't embarrass me, don't get people looking over here, right? So they call for newcomers, and all of a sudden I see her hand start to shoot up, and I slammed it down on the table, I'm like, no, oh my God, it's horrifying. And then this guy gets up, it's a cake meeting, guy gets up and he says, I'm Dan, I'm an alcoholic, and I haven't had a drink in 6 years. And I remember thinking, these people don't drink at all. What kind of program is this? Oh, my God. I don't know what I thought. I don't know what I thought I was getting myself into, but that was horrifying to me. Like, oh, my God, I can't drink at all. And I couldn't do it. And I said, okay, yeah, Mom, I'm going to meet you back at home. You know, and I went to the bar and I did the same thing. And because it was right before St. Patrick's Day, and I was going to this Irish bar, and you can't really quit drinking right before St. Patrick's Day when you go to O'Sullivan's Pub, right? So, of course, I had to go and do St. Patrick's Day at O'Sullivan's Pub and end up getting arrested again and humiliating myself and one more time waking up in jail. And I went back to the bar right after they released me, and they had already cut me off there because they knew who I was. I was getting beers other ways. I had a barmaid put them in the bathroom for me. I mean, you know, we go to any lengths. And I threatened the barmaid with a knife, all of this stuff. And I went, you know, she's laughing. She's like, ha ha, so did I. She's like, that's so funny. But I went home and I woke up the next morning and I thought, I can't keep doing this. And I got real suicidal, and I sat there, and I pulled out my knife, and I sat there, and I thought, I'm just going to stab myself to death. And all I could think of was, God help me. And somehow I got up off the floor, I went to the junk drawer, I pulled out the meeting schedule that I had from the meeting a couple of weeks before, and I went to a meeting that day. And I sat there, and I looked around the room, and you guys were talking all this AA stuff that I didn't understand. And all I could think was, oh my God, you guys are lame and old and happy. You're happy. And you were laughing and you were talking to each other and I'm over in the corner dying and I didn't raise my hand. I didn't want you to look at me or talk to me or I didn't know what I wanted. I was so hungover and I was so broken. And I thought, okay. You know, I'll hang out after the meeting. And I sat out on the bench and everybody left. And this old guy, Monty, came up to me and he said hi and he asked me who I was. And he said, I want to see you at the meeting here tonight. It's a 7 o'clock speaker meeting. I want you to be here. And I said, okay. He said, do you think you can stay sober that long? And I said, I don't know. And I remember thinking, when I showed up to the meeting, because I'd been kicked out of every bar in Santa Maria like twice, I remember thinking, if anybody asks why I'm here, or they try and kick me out, I'm going to tell them that Monty told me I could come. Because that's how low I was. I could not look you in the eye. I couldn't do any of that. I knew when I walked in the room, I read the traditions and I read the steps. I'm looking for rules because you're going to kick me out. And I saw the third tradition and I thought, that says I can be here. I can be here. Even in my, you know, too tight tank top with my beer belly and my pants that are way too tight, no shoes and no bra and just a wreck. I can be here. I mean, that's the vision of loveliness that I was when I got here. You know, I would put I would put on my best Harley tank top, you know, and come to the meeting. I remember I had a Jack Daniel's shirt that, you know, looked like it was a Jack Daniel's shirt, and I used to wear it to the meetings to piss people off. So I vacillated between, you guys are awesome, oh my God, where do you get this stuff? It's like you're Yoda or something. And oh my God, you guys are stupid and lame and I don't want to do this. I wasn't supposed to stay here, according to a lot of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're too angry, Suzanne. Because I would sit in meetings and you'd talk about God and I'd have to get up and leave. You'd read something in the book and it would be like, something, something, God, and I'd roll my eyes and I'd get up and I'd walk out. But this lady came up to me after the meeting. She told my story. She was the speaker the night that Monty invited me to that meeting. And she said she was going to be my sponsor and I could call her. And I started calling her and I started taking suggestions, even though they were stupid and ridiculous. And I didn't want to do that. And she told me, call me anytime. Call me at 2 o'clock in the morning. Call me when you want to drink. And so I called her like 12 times a day because I wanted to drink all day long, you know. And she told me to call her at 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I was up, so I did. You know, but she answered the phone and she was nice and you all were nice. I mean, you had all this weird stuff you did, right? Like we'd get up after the meeting and I'd want to go and you want to hold my hand and say a prayer. Are you kidding? What kind of cult is this? Oh my God. And you wanted a hug. It's like back off of me. I know what hugs mean where I come from, you know, just back up. And it got to the point where people were afraid of me, so they wouldn't want to hug me anyway. They would, like, think twice, because I would sit in the meeting in the corner, and I carried a knife. Still carried the knife, because it made me feel safe. And I would clean my nails, and I would just glare at people, you know, daring you to come up and talk to me, right? And then I'd talk to my sponsor after the meeting and go, nobody talks to me. Everybody's so stuck up. Right? And the part that really sucks about getting sober is the feelings and the fear comes back. You know, I mean, the difference, and I often say this, between when I was drinking and when I got sober is, you know, I'm drinking and I'm at, you know, bike fest on the back of a Harley and people are like, hey, show your boobs. And I'm like, woo, right? I come into AA and they go, hey, Suzanne, you want to read How It Works from the Podium? And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to embarrass myself. Right? I mean, you know, I turn into a completely different person sober. I thought this was going to be easy. I remember I stayed sober a few days and I told my mom, she goes, how's the meetings going? And I go, these people are so nice, this is going to be easy. Yeah, I was kind of stupid back then, wasn't I? It was for, you know, a couple of weeks. Everybody was so nice, and I called, and I did the stuff, and I read page 449, which is, you know, page 417 in the fourth edition. Acceptance is the answer to all our problems today. And she would, you know, my sponsor was like a saint. She just put up with me. I would call her all the time. I would drink a pot of coffee in the morning and call her and go, now what? You wouldn't believe what the neighbors did to me. Or I'm going off about something. And she'd be like, how much coffee have you had to drink? And I'm like, I'm just starting on my second pot. She's like, have you had anything to eat? I'm like, no, you're not listening. I have problems. So, yeah, that lady was a saint. So she started talking to me about God and said, you know what, Suzanne, I want you to pray every morning for God to keep you sober. And I said, yeah, I've already talked to you about this. I don't believe in God and I'm not doing that. She said, I don't care if you believe it or not, do it. So I started doing that. And I called her every day and told her how much I wanted to drink. And she would invite me over to her house with my daughter. And she'd let me stomp around her kitchen and scream for a while and until I felt better. And then I'd go home, right? And then I kept doing that. And one day, she says, okay, come over. Bring your daughter. I said, okay. So I bring my daughter over to her house. I'm waiting for her to fix me, right? Because that's what we do here. We fix other people, right? She meets me at the car and she tells my daughter, Danielle, go in the house. And she looks at me and she goes, you're either going to go to a meeting or you're going to drink. I don't care what you do at this point. You need to own your recovery. Nobody can do this but you. This is for you. You're not doing this for me. You're going to have to figure out if you really want this. And it was like somebody slapped me upside the head. And I thought, oh my God. Because I had told her, I don't want to go to the meeting. All the old guys are there. I can't listen to the same stuff over and over and over again. You know how we do. And those old guys saved my life. You know. I learned in here how to take direction, whether I believed it would work or not. Because most of the stuff that you told me to do, I didn't believe it was going to work. It was like, well, that's dumb. I don't want to read that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to write about that. I had stayed sober for 2 weeks, and Mary had told me I could pray for anything I wanted, and I kind of prayed for excitement. Don't do that. The minute I prayed for excitement, this guy comes roaring up on a Harley into my driveway. I didn't remember him because, you know, I roofie myself every night, so he remembered me. He asked me if I wanted to go for a ride, and I said, sure. So we go for a ride, we go to his house, he's like, hey, you want a beer? I'm like, no, I've been sober in Alcoholics Anonymous for 2 weeks, and I start talking to him about AA and all this stuff, and he goes, do you want to split one? And I said, sure. Yep, and that night ended like every other night like that. I got him in the back, in the side of my car. I kept coming in and out of blackouts. At one point, we were going the wrong way down Broadway in Santa Maria. I was going like 90 miles an hour. He's screaming. And then the next time I come out of the blackout, he's naked. I'm throwing him out of my house. I don't know. It was just a regular, like, Friday night in my life. But then I woke up in the morning, and you know how it is. You want to die. You know. I don't remember my last drink, but I do remember my last drunk. My last drunk was at the 1600 Club in Santa Maria, where I went to meetings. And I had kept trying to go back to meetings, but I would drink and for about a week. And I went to the women's meeting, and I told all these blue-haired old ladies I was just so restless, irritable, and discontent. They called on me to share. They made that mistake. And I told them all, I said, you know what? You can all go to hell. I'm going to go drink. And as I'm walking out the door, you hear this chorus of old ladies go, you keep coming back, honey. You know, and it was like, eh. And I drank. And I went and I had some peach schnapps at my house that I had apparently stuck in the freezer or something. I'm sure it was a reservation, but who drinks that anyway? That was something my brother had gotten me for Christmas like 5 years before that nobody would drink. But it was there. So I took that bottle and I went and drank it at the 1600 Club. So, you know, nasty. Ugh. And it only took me about a week to get back. I drank for a couple of days after that, but it was a beer here and there. And you guys had ruined my drinking so bad I couldn't even enjoy it anymore. Not even the first six pack, you know. My first year of sobriety was the hardest year. You know, the people that took 1 year, congratulations. That's so amazing. That was the best year, and it was the hardest year I've ever had to do in my life. I was unemployable. I was broke all the time. My parents were no longer helping me out. I've got this kid that's 4 years old that keeps looking at me and wanting me to be her mom, and I don't know how to do that because, you know, hell, mentally I'm 12, so what am I going to do for her? And I just kept praying for God to reveal himself to me in a way that I can understand, because that's what was taught to me. You know, when you come in here and you come in here with all the baggage and all the shame and the guilt, and what do you do with that, right? Well, you work the steps. You work the steps. The problem when I was new, I say the problem like there was one, right? The problem when I was new is that every time I went to lay down at night to go to sleep, the videos would run through my head about all the hideous things I had done and everything that had been done to me. And I just couldn't make it turn off, you know, and I didn't quite believe in this God because I thought that was ridiculous, but I was just doing the whole God keep me sober thing because Mary told me to, and I couldn't call her back unless I did it, you know. And I would lay in bed at night, and finally I said, okay, you big spook, if you're up there, help me out. And I closed my eyes and I pictured myself sleeping in God's hands, and I went to sleep. I actually went to sleep, you know, and Mary told me I could pray for anything I wanted to, so I prayed for signs, you know. I'd call her up, I go, I got this problem. She says, talk to God, ask God to give you an answer in the meeting, and I would do that, and I would get the answer in the meeting. So all these little things added up to me coming to believe in a power greater than myself, you know. I knew you guys, I used the group, you guys were a power greater than myself, but I didn't have that personal God, and she told me, you can have any kind of God you want. And I said, okay, well that sounds blasphemous, but I'll do that, right? And she drank, I had about 5 months of sobriety, she was coming up on 6 years, and she drank. And it taught me how to reach out to other people. I almost went with her, honestly. I almost went and drank with her, because when your sponsor drinks and you have 4 months and she's your everything and you've got her up on this pedestal. But I didn't. I reached out to other women in the program and I just hung onto my ass. Because when I say I wanted to drink every day, it was just about every day for the first year. I am actually surprised I stayed here, and most of the people that were there with me were surprised I stayed here. I had learned so much in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the first year was hard, and then it got a little bit easier. And like 2 to 5, I mean, I was doing pretty good. People were telling me how great I was doing. You're doing so much better. You're not threatening to kill people anymore. You know, and they would pat me on the back and say all these things. And I'm thinking, yeah, right. I'm doing all right. And pretty soon you stop working the program because I've worked all the steps. You know, I'm kind of sponsoring people, I'm doing things, but, you know, so, but I'm not really relating in meetings anymore, and I'm, you know, you want to read How It Works, Suzanne? No, I don't want to do that. You want to lead the meeting, Suzanne? No, I don't want to do that. Why aren't you saying the Lord's Prayer, Suzanne? No, I don't want to do that. And I got to the point, I sat in a meeting one time. I was getting restless, irritable, and discontent. You know how we do. But you don't, there's nothing really going on, but you don't feel okay, and you don't know why. And a lot of people experience this between 5 and 7 years. Because, you know, I know all this stuff. I got this. What else? Is there anything else here? You know, is this all there is? And I got to the point, and I didn't realize anything was really, really wrong until I was in the drive-thru at a Jack in the Box, and the guy in front of me was taking too long to order, and I was getting ready to get out of my car. You know how we seethe, and I'm in a rage, and you're taking too long to order your cheeseburger or whatever, and I'm about ready to go rip this guy out of his car. Okay, I'm sure it was like 3 minutes or something, I don't know. And something told me, get back in the car and leave, and I went to a meeting. And they called on me to share, and I said, I'm Suzanne, I'm an alcoholic, and if I stay sober another week, I'll have 6 years of sobriety, and I don't care. I don't care. I want to go drink and die and take you with me. And I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that I suit up and I show up and I tell the truth, even when it makes me look bad. Especially when it makes me look bad. Because I have to be honest with you. I heard so much in meetings from the old-timers, you know, what it was like, my life is great because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I ever heard. Nobody ever got real and said, you know what, when I hit this period of sobriety, I don't know what happened, but man, I lost my mind. You know, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to relapse in order to start over. I had a lady come up to me after the meeting and she said, are you willing to do the steps again? And I did them again, and I did them thoroughly. And I got on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous again. You know, and I've had to recommit to Alcoholics Anonymous because this is the best deal in town. You know, if this didn't work, you'd be sitting in this place by yourself. I mean, look around the room. This is a Saturday night. We're not sitting in church. We're at the bar. We're halfway to getting arrested by now. I mean, it's 9:30, you know, come on. Nobody wants to sit here and do this. This program works. You know, and I managed to stay sober for 33 years. I'm sorry, I wasn't supposed to get a year. 30 days was big. You know, I should have relapsed at 6. I should have relapsed at 10. But I didn't. You know, and the obsession eventually went away after about 2 years, you know. And occasionally a thought would crop up, but I haven't wanted to drink or thought about drinking in 20 years, at least. You know, I've walked through some stuff. If you stick around here, you will walk through some stuff. You know, I've walked through both my parents dying, my best friend dying, watching people relapse, watching women in recovery go out on pills and die. I mean, but then I've gotten the good stuff too. You know, my daughter grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, she's 37 years old today and she's got 3 kids of her own. I mean, had you asked me when I got here, hey, you want to be a grandma? No. No, it is not on my list. I didn't want to be a mom, much less a grandma. I love being a grandma. I'm the coolest grandma ever. I could never repay what has been so freely given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I get to work with amazing women and some men in Alcoholics Anonymous that blow my mind. I got my self-respect back here. I mean, you can't put a price on that, you know. And most of the time when I'm working a program, I have my own approval today. I was always looking at you. You know, what do you think about me? Am I okay? It's such a gift to have your own approval, you know. And I'm so grateful to be here tonight, although I didn't want to do this. This was the last thing. And God, man, quit giving out my phone number. What is wrong with you? Thanks for letting me.